Right now, it's time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us live on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast Arthur during the weekend, and we love to talk about FOOO food. Good morning, Arthur.
Thank you for making me laugh.
Hey, I had somebody.
So this will make you smile. Malomars.
Malomars. Wow.
Did you grow up with Malomars?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where did you grow up again?
Oh, well, I was born in New York City, but in West Cornwall, my grandmother, yeah, Malamars, yeah.
Well, it was my father's favorite cookie. And I had my nieces, great nieces, who are 5 and a half and 8 next week, this weekend, and I thought I should introduce them to Malamars, which was their great grandfather's favorite cookie. So, to say that they like them is a great understatement, because I didn't love them when I was a kid. I thought it was strange that was my father's favorite cookie. And to this day, I'm not a huge fan of marshmallows. So even when my nephew and niece and their girls do the s'mores bit in the summer, I'm sort of... okay. Yeah, the girls always want me to have a bite, but no, that's it. So it only dawned on me the other day that a Malamar is basically a s'more. The bottom is a graham cracker-like cookie topped with a marshmallow, all coated with chocolate. And because it is actually quite good chocolate, even now as an old man, I can tell you, I'll verify, this is good chocolate. they don't sell them in the summer. They're reintroduced into the market in September. And as soon as I saw, when in September, it's about when school starts, when the weather gets cool enough for the supermarkets to keep them, because, of course, in the old days, there was no air conditioning in the supermarket, so they didn't want the cookies to melt in the summer. Then it became a marketing thing. And now they're only sold between September and March, and are celebrating their 100th birthday, or just about. They were actually created by a baker in New Jersey, of course taken over by Nabisco eventually, and they are. It ends up, and this says it on the side of the box, 70% of all the sales are in Metro New York. And it is a strictly New York specialty. Now, some other colder parts of the country get them, but I had a laugh about this when I was telling this to my next-door neighbor yesterday, and she has two sisters from Brooklyn who now live in Florida. She said, oh, this is funny, because one of the biggest disappointments when they retired to Florida was that they couldn't get Malamars in Florida. They don't sell Malamars in Florida, not in Boca Raton or wherever they live.
You know what we used to do with them? We used to keep them in the refrigerator, and then every once in a while we would put them actually in the freezer portion.
Well, this is a great idea, Marshall. I think they're probably delicious frozen, but I'm sorry you told me that, because now, you know, if I keep them frozen, that means I'll eat them.
That's right.
Which brings me to the fact, so I bought 2 boxes of Malamars. And Bob and I opened one as soon as I brought them home, because we had to taste them. I hadn't had one in years. Oh, so by the way, in September, when they reintroduced them this year, there were literally walls of Malamars in the supermarkets that I shop in. And I just read the other day that they were also was giving them away practically. It was like 99 cents a box or $1.99 a box. I don't even know what I paid, but it was probably not that much. In any case, they come very nicely packaged in some kind of clear material, I want to say cellophane, in slots, like it was, you know, really fine candy. So they really make a whole thing out of it. And now when I went to buy them for Sydney and Maya, I didn't know anybody else ate them besides me, Bob, Sydney, and Maya. I have to ask. Anyway, I hid a box. We had one box out, and then I hid the open box that Bob and I had started, and now I can't find it. So I hid it from us. So I'm trying. This morning, one of my chores will be to figure this out and then give them away, because they are addictive. And Sydney can turn her nose up at sweets most of the time. She will tell you, an 8-year-old, that sugar is not good for you. She's also on the verge of vegetarianism, although I challenged her on this, and I said, well, you eat hamburgers. And she said, well, I don't see the animal. So, and, you know, she's right. And I just, so it reminds me of a story that we used to tell in the family. I'm just now thinking of it. But my mother's first cousin, Danny, who was in fact like her brother because he grew up with my mother and uncle, the family. Danny was kosher, but he would eat fried rice at a Chinese restaurant. And I once said to him, you know, but you're kosher. Why are you eating roast pork fried rice? And he said, well, they cut it up so small, I don't have to think about it being there. So I understand that attitude, you know, but she's 8 years old. Anyway, so Malamars are out there. Get them while you can. They're sold only between September and March. And I'm sure they're a great consolation in February, frozen. Maybe put it at the back of the freezer so that you forget about it until it's an emergency. I could do that.
Yeah.
All right, so this, in my quest for eating better for less, which I think is a subject we all could enjoy, because even if you have the money to buy a steak at $26 a pound, you still, some days you don't want to spend that much on meat. Shouldn't eat that much meat anyway. But I do use broth, and I went to the market. I have an actual butcher, because he always has chicken backs that I can buy, and he freezes them too, because so many people, like my niece, doesn't want to look at the animal. They buy chicken cutlets. So he sells a lot of boneless, skinless chicken. And what do you do with all the remains? You sell it as for soup or whatever people want to do with it. And it's cheap, $1.99 a pound. And makes, I buy six or seven pounds. And I make, I end up with 6 or 7 quarts of very good stock. But I go to the market, and somebody had just come in and bought them out of all. Somebody else had the same idea. It was like the first really cold day here. And I said, I have to make broth. I have an empty freezer. We've used up all the broth. But I did end up buying beef neck bones, a cut I have not cooked in a long time. I don't make much beef broth. And usually I can find something, you know, other bones with a little meat clinging to it that will produce a good broth or a good enough broth. But the butcher did have beef neck bones that day that looked too good to pass up, and they were. And they were $4 a pound, and I'm thinking, well, you know, it's not as inexpensive as you think, Arthur, because there's a lot of bone here. But I bought them and made broth with them, and in the end, there wasn't that much bone. I mean, it was enough bone to make a really good broth, but I also had a lot of meat. And I let this broth cook for 6 hours. So I ended up with 2 quarts of really good, strong beef broth, which, if I was making soup, for instance, I'd end up watering down. I let this cook down over the 6 hours because I don't have much freezer space. So if I do a very strong broth, I can always water it down a little bit. It's only water that made it strong, you know, lack of water that made it strong. And so what I normally do, chicken backs or whatever, beef neck bones, whatever bones and with meat clinging to it, or meaty bones. In the case of chicken, I just throw it in the pot and let it come to a boil and skim it. With beef, I want a nice brown broth, so I roast the bones. So in this case, beef neck bones, I put them in a roasting pan. with a nice size onion cut into quarters, and nothing but salt and pepper on the meat. And I roasted it for half an hour at 450 degrees. And at the when I'm doing something like this and I want good browning, I put it on the top shelf or, you know, near the top of the oven, as opposed to middle or bottom of the oven. And then after, you know, a half hour or so, I flipped it, the meat, once during this process. Maybe it was even 40 minutes altogether. You have nice browned meat and a slightly charred onion, and let it cool down a little bit, and then put it in a big pot that you're going to boil in. I think this was, I used like a 5-quart pot. Could have been a little bigger. And it doesn't matter. Put in your beef bones. Put in a carrot or two, depending on the size of the carrot. You know, scraped, peeled, cut into chunks. Several ribs. I like celery in broths. It just gives a freshness that the, you know, that I think the meat calls for. So I put in 2 big ribs of celery, washed and just cut into thirds each, into the pot. The onion, of course, you got from the roasting pan. And if there's any, and there probably is, some nice stuff at the bottom of the roasting pan, rinse it out with water, scrape up anything you need to scrape up, and pour that in over the meat in the big pot and with the vegetables, and then cover the meat well with water and bring it to a simmer. No skimming necessary. Bring it to a simmer, and I let mine simmer for 6 full hours, and I make broth often enough. I put up my broth at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and then I turn off the heat when I go to sleep, which is usually, well, I don't want to leave the bedroom for sure after 10 o'clock. So 10 o'clock, I'll turn off the heat, and, you know, dirty secret, I let it sit on the stove until I wake up in the morning, which is extremely early. But still, it's been sitting there for at least, I would say, 6 or 7 hours. And then I ladle out the broth and strain it. And what I ended up with was way more meat than I expected. And it was early in the morning, but I said, oh, this looks too good to just, you know, throw it away. I had this great broth, but, which was my primary goal. But I started stripping the meat from the bones, and the meat was really good. Even though it had cooked for 6 hours, it was really, really flavorful meat. And so now I'm going to stew neck bones next time. I'm going to buy some today, actually, and make a nice stew with them. But this is, you know, broth, and now I had boiled meat. I could have eaten this boiled meat just with some horseradish and salt and been very happy with whatever vegetables. However, I decided to, what I had in the house, actually, was a red pepper and a green pepper, which are very keto-friendly. There's only 8 grams, 9 grams of carbohydrates in a big pepper. Divided by all this meat that I was going to cook wouldn't amount to much in each serving. And so, I don't know, this was totally freestyle. I sautéed an onion, you know, life begins with sauté an onion. And then I added the peppers, cut into, I would say, 1-inch squares, really chunky squares. You can cut them any which way you want. You can put, you know, it was just my mood that day. And I put that in with the onions for just a couple of minutes. And then I added a 14-ounce can of tomato puree that I mistakenly bought and was looking for a use for. It was seasoned with garlic and basil, and it's not my style. It's probably a good product. It was okay, actually, just okay. And it was a very popular, in Italy, brand, Muti, M-U-T-I. You see it all over the place. It's very well distributed these days. And I do like Muti tomato paste. Anyway, which comes in a tube. In any case, I then threw in my can of Muti and let that all simmer just a couple of minutes. And then I added all the meat that I'd stripped off the bones. The bones I threw away, and some of the meat shredded, and some of the meat came off in big hunks, and I just left it however I got it off the bone. And the fat, whatever fat was there, and there was still some fat, believe it or not, it was so melting that I just left it. Because I figured after it simmers in sauce for a while, it'll all come together. And it did. I added, oh, what I failed to mention is that in my beef broth, I also added a couple of bay leaves and about a teaspoon, because it was a big pot full, of dried thyme. I think those are good flavors for bringing out the beefiness of beef. So in the sauce, I did put a pinch of thyme. And then I had this basil garlic tomato sauce. In the end, you didn't know it was there, so the basil and the garlic, so it was okay. And I let that all simmer together, and basically until the peppers were crisp tender. And in the end, it was so much, we did not eat it. We could not eat. The two of us could not eat it all by a long shot. So we had it the next day as well. We enjoyed it a lot, I got to say. The meat was so melting. It was really good and not stringy. Neck bone meat. The next day, when I reheated it, of course, the peppers became soft, and it sort of became almost another dish. I was almost tempted to reseason it somehow. And you know, you can play with this thing. Really good beef flavor out of beef neck bones. So I'm going to try next time braising them, which means I'm going to brown the meat in a big stew pot. And then I'm going to cook maybe some onion, garlic. We'll see. And then deglaze the pan with red wine and add some tomato paste. As I said, thyme and bay leaf is my flavors for even a beef stew. And that's it. And I would just enough wine and add some broth. Now, I have 2 quarts of really strong beef broth in the freezer, which definitely makes me feel secure, Marshall. One of my security blankets. I always have broth in the freezer.
I always keep chicken broth. I always keep chicken broth in the freezer.
Yeah, but exactly. I always keep chicken. So, you know, today I got to go shopping again and get some chicken backs or something to make broth. I don't like making broth with a chicken. The breast is too precious to put in a soup pot, I feel. Unless you're just going to, you know, cook the chicken just so, you can do that and eat the chicken breast and the other dark meat and then put the carcass back in the pot and simmer that. That, you know, now I'm noticing in the supermarket, well, I've noticed it for several years now, but it seems bigger than ever, bone broth.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what I just described to you is a beef bone broth. And if you want to make a chicken, but the difference between chicken bone broth and chicken broth, to me, is that normal chicken broth, or you could say chicken soup, is not cooked for a very, very long time. And so the gelatin, I guess it's collagen, really, in the bones, does not get absorbed is not the right word, but the broth itself does not become full of protein from the bones and the gels. So normal chicken soup might have a light, like I would make my grandmother style, a good chicken soup, will have a light gel. But if you want something to be called bone broth, to me, you got to have a heavy gel, not a light gel. And I have actually, I did not let this beef broth refrigerate because I knew I wasn't going to use it right away. I put it, as soon as it came to room temperature, in the storage containers I put it in. I have one quart, so I know exactly how much I have here. Oh, by the way, it actually, what I just described to you, using 4 pounds, by the way, of beef neck bones, I figured this out, the 4 pounds of beef neck bones cost $16. They were $4 a pound. I ended up with 2 quarts of what they call bone broth, which in my supermarket cost $5 a container, so that's $10 right there. And then we had enough of this beef and pepper. By the way, I made it with peppers because I had the peppers in the house, because we eat a lot of peppers because we're on this low-carb diet. If you are not on a low-carb diet, by all means, eat this with some really good carb and eat some more for me. Or put potatoes in, or serve it on rice. I'm not sure that this goes with pasta, but noodles, the beef with peppers certainly goes with noodles. I mean, I would get a wide egg noodle. So that was $16, 2 quarts of broth, and at least 6 servings of the meat itself, which, as I said, was sensational. I think it's a bargain that is definitely eating better for less. But you shouldn't eat too much of this because, you know, you could put some in the freezer, even though it's cooked to death, as seems. I know it will freeze perfectly well. So you could, if you're cooking for two, as I am, we don't mind eating some. I thought the second day was almost better than the first day. But I definitely would eat it one day and put the rest in the freezer. And then you've got a meal made already. And that's that. Now,
it's funny.
I got to go search for the Malamars.
Well, you know, they're much better if you keep them in the refrigerator. But for a real,
listen, they weren't bad at room temperature.
But this and chocolate gets a little
Maya
crispy.
Couldn't keep her hands off of them, and she's a very polite 5-year-old dairy. She always asks, and she's very pleased and thank you, even thank you very much. And she certainly, her eyes light up when I say, yes, you can have another Malamar. Now, her parents weren't around to say I couldn't do this. But she did not do well with all the Malamars. Let's just say that.
Yeah, it's nice when if you just put them in the refrigerator, there's a nice little crispiness to the chocolate.
Oh, well, no, let me tell you, Maya figured out how to peel the chocolate off. And then, in fact, I was going to talk about, I once did a whole show on this, Marshall. Who knew that everybody, of course, has a different feeling about it. Do you eat the best part first, or the best part, or save the best part for last?
I eat the best part first.
You eat, well, Maya does too. Right. What's your astrological sign?
I'm a Scorpio.
Oh, well, she's a Pisces, so there goes that theory.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, yeah, everybody, of course, falls into one camp or the other. I think I eat a little bit of each back and forth. Now, what does that mean about me?
Well, you know, like it's like with Oreo cookies. I always split the Oreo cookies open and eat the inside first, always. When I eat them, always.
Well, my sister was like that, too. I always thought I wanted the whole experience the way they wanted me to have it. So that's why in a restaurant I'm accepting of, or not, I won't eat there, of a chef's way of doing something. And if also I grew up with a mother who, when you didn't want to eat what she made, she would say, this isn't a restaurant. So anyway, Malamars. We went to see the Christmas Spectacular at Rockefeller Center at Radio City Music Hall. What did I say? Anyway, it's different than from when I was a kid, and it has a lot of light aspects to it, which work very well at Rockefeller Center because, you know, it's so expansive. And it was delightful, as always, but it's a Rockettes show now. I think when I was younger, it was more of a variety show. Now it's mainly Rockettes and a corps de ballet, and Rockettes and a corps de ballet. But, you know, and then Santa Claus is the MC. So I've been trying to convince my 5-year-old great niece that I am Santa Claus. Because she said to me, why is your belly so big? I said, because I'm Santa Claus. And so she, this, it took her a few hours to come over and say, I don't think you're Santa Claus. But now I put this question mark in her head because she saw Santa Claus on the stage and I was sitting right behind her. So,
all right, Santa.
Okay.
We'll speak to you.
All right.
Next
everybody,
week?
Merry Christmas. Yes. Hanukkah ended last night.
Right, yep.
Yeah, Sydney was quick to remind me that, Uncle Arthur, this is the last night of Hanukkah. Do we get another present?
That's right. All right, Arthur.
All right, take care, everyone.
Take care, bye-bye. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio and robinhoodradio.com.